Take a look around here at this building that has not burned down. Thanks be to God. The cornerstone of this building was laid 120 years ago on All Saints Day in 1898. Now, in 1898, the dominant story in the news was the Spanish-American War. Stoked by yellow journalism and imperialistic ambitions, the war raged for most of the year and resulted in the United States annexing Cuba and Puerto Rico and Guam and the Philippines. Automobiles were brand new technology then. The first American-built one was purchased in 1898. It was also the year of the world's first fatal automobile accident. Utah was a brand new state, but New Mexico, Arizona, and Alaska were all still territories. Hawaii was annexed that year. William McKinley was president, but only women in Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and Idaho could have voted for him, because women in all of the other states weren't allowed to vote. Women were allowed to be made deaconesses in the Episcopal Church. Well, unmarried or widowed women were allowed to become deaconesses in the Episcopal Church. But women could not serve on the vestry or read the lessons in church or serve at the altar. Now, 4 years prior to laying the cornerstone in 1894, a group of Episcopalians who had been meeting in the Beaconsfield Casino formed a new parish in Brookline, also on All Saints Day, November 1st. 1894 was the year that Coca-Cola was first sold in bottles. Telephones were relatively new technology, but becoming as ubiquitous as cell phones now. And in those years, the United States was in a major economic depression. Only the Great Depression of the 1930s was worse in terms of the number of people unemployed. So the background to the founding of this parish was the Gilded Age. It was the age of boom and bust, the age of monopolies and trusts, the age of Rockefeller and Carnegie and J.P. Morgan and Andrew Mellon, of Boss Tweed and Tammany Hall. It was also the age of labor unions and mass strikes protesting unemployment and the horrific working conditions and the tremendous income inequality that existed. One estimate said that 2% of American households owned more than a third of the nation's wealth, and the top 10% owned 3/4 of all the wealth. The bottom 40% had virtually nothing. History never truly repeats, but sometimes it rhymes. It was also the age of the new immigration. Instead of Scots and Irish and Germans, there was a massive increase in Italians and Russians and Jews and Chinese. So many immigrants came that the federal government opened up a brand new reception center in 1892. You might have heard of it. It was called Ellis Island. These were the decades also that saw the rise of populist, anarchist, and socialist movements. History never truly repeats, but sometimes it rhymes. So take another look around you. You see those reredos over the resting chapel and the one over the altar in the Langdon Chapel? Those were painted by Julia Addison, the wife of our first rector. And those windows over here in the Langdon Chapel, Julia Champlin and her husband George gave bequests, not only for those windows, but for the rectory as well. Now, those windows depict Christians of the first century, Christians living under Roman domination, under Roman persecution. There's St. Stephen, who was stoned to death, and St. Peter and Paul and St. James, and then early martyrs of the church, Polycarp, Catherine of Alexandria, and Perpetua and Irenaeus. We know that people today still die because of their faith, The window in the very back corner there honors Sophia Langdon Tyler, the mother of Barrett Tyler, our second rector. Sophie worked in Wyoming with the Arapaho Nation after they had been forced onto the Wind River Reservation. And her son, Barrett, left All Saints in 1932 also to go to St. Michael's Mission in Wyoming. Now, missionizing Native populations is not something we would necessarily celebrate today, but it's part of our history and we can't avoid it. His son, also named Barrett, is in that window as well. He was an army chaplain, and Captain Tyler was killed in the Philippines in 1945, just months before World War II ended. The doors down there that most of you came through were redone in 1953 as a tribute to those from All Saints who had served in World War II. And in the back corner, there used to be a war shrine where prayers were said every day at noon from D-Day, June 6, 1944, until the end of the war. Those windows over there are dedicated by and to the Corey family. So Corey Road, Corey Farm, the Coreys owned a lot of property around here. Eva Corey was one of the first women to be elected to the National Council of the Episcopal Church. She died in 1943, and her sister Linda died in 1961, and they left us an endowment, which we continue to be good stewards of and draw only a small portion each year. The vast majority of our income comes from pledges. The Coreys were passionate about outreach and youth ministries, ministries that we continue to be passionate about and continue to be vital here. Those windows over there tell the story of the early church, from Pentecost to Thomas Cranmer writing the Book of Common Prayer, and the next one over tells some of the almost forgotten aspects of early Christians in North America. The Log College, the Haystack Meeting, the printing of the book, the Bay Psalm Book. How many of you have heard of any of those? A few. You can read all about them in Rick Montrose's nifty little History of All Saints Windows, and there's copies in the back there. Those windows weren't even installed until the 1950s. The nave altar here was installed in 1969. The point is, a lot has changed here, but a lot remains the same. Because history never repeats, but sometimes it rhymes. So here's a question. Do you think that the saints depicted in our windows, or the faithful souls who dedicated these windows and who gathered here week after week, do you think that they were ever doubtful of what the future held? Do you think they were ever fearful and worried? Do you imagine that they were ever overwhelmed or exhausted or unsure what to do next or where to turn? Of course they were. And when we talk about the great cloud of witnesses, when we celebrate the Feast of All Saints and the commemoration of all faithful departed, this is what we mean. These people, the ones depicted in our windows, and the ones whose hearts and whose hands and whose generosity built these walls, they're not just pretty pictures in glass or names on brass plaques. They're our family. And they're here and present with us now. And presiding over all of it is Christ, ascended and in the rose window, seated in glory. This is the communion that we just baptized Maggie into. It is a universal and eternal communion, and we and they are her sisters and brothers. And every one of these people started out just like she did. They all needed to have their ears opened. They all needed to have their eyes opened. They all needed to find their voice. And like Lazarus, they all needed to be unbound. They needed to be freed to do God's work in the world, in their world, in their Roman world, in their revolutionary world, in their frontier world, in their Gilded Age world, in their world which had all kinds of problems, deep, vexing problems, and no clear solutions at all. They needed to have their ears opened to hear the good news. They needed to have their eyes opened to see the possibilities. They needed to be unbound to act for a better world, a world without hatred, a world without discrimination, a world with enough for all, a world that we heard described in our reading from Revelation today. And they heard and saw and found their voice and acted on their faith. They proclaimed the good news. They continued in the apostles' teaching. They sought and served Christ in all people. They strove for justice and peace. All of those things that we just promised, again, to do ourselves. Promised that we would help Maggie do. That we promised that we would help all of our children do. Now, of course, they didn't do it perfectly. And neither will we, but they kept doing it. And they didn't complete the work, and neither will we, but they kept doing it, and so must we. So take another look around you. This time look at the people near you, at the people who are journeying with you. Because now, it's up to us. We have to be part of this narrative too. Because history never repeats. But sometimes it rhymes. What will our stanza in this poem be? What will they say of us in the years to come when they tell our story? Our world has plenty of problems, but we have plenty to offer. We have opening ears and opening eyes. We have hearts that long for a better world and hands to work to bring it about. We only need to be unbound from anything that holds us back, so that we can rise up and join with all of the saints, singing praises to God from whom all blessings flow and with whom nothing, nothing is impossible. Amen.